You're listening to Inside Agriculture from the Meridian Manufacturing Studios on 910 Classic Country, KCJB in Minot. Farm News in Real Country, Thunder 106.1, as well as Ag News 890 in Lisbon and Fargo, North Dakota. Well, stories of stress in the farming community continue to crop up as producers struggle with low prices, also a strong dollar and depressed export values. Now, the farming crisis hasn't reached a critical mass yet, but Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says the stories of economic stress aren't going away.
We're hearing a little bit from bankers. We're hearing isolated instances of farmers. We're hearing that the 800 number where farmers that are in trouble can call in and ask for help or get advice, that they're getting a few more calls now.
Grassley said both land renters and owners are being hit, though renters are getting hit harder.
It's the people that have paid the extra high cash rent that some farmers, even last year, had to let some of that land go back to the landlords to rent to somebody else because they couldn't handle it. There's a little bit of that this year. And then farmers that are farming land that they own or partly own, I haven't heard of complete farmers going out of business, but I've heard that some bankers are requiring them when they borrow operating money to capitalize it in the land.
American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall told a House Ag panel recently that there's no farming crisis today, but rather one is on the horizon. USDA forecasts a one-third drop in net cash farm income this year compared with 2013. Farm operating debt has also grown by a third since 2012 as farmers draw down their cash and equity to survive. Also, South American consultant Dr. Michael Cordonier cut his Argentine soybean crop estimate by 2 million metric tons to 57 million metric tons. The cuts came due to recent flooding in the country, although he admits it's difficult to estimate these losses. Pro Farmers First Thing Today notes he has lower bias on soybeans because of the wet weather as it continues. On corn, he maintains his Argentine corn crop estimate at 25 million metric tons, but is a neutral to lower bias ahead. He also lowered his Brazilian soybean crop estimate by 500,000 metric tons to 98 million metric tons. He notes that yields in northeastern Brazil were disappointing, and of course, that due to dryness. And in far southern Brazil, due to heavy rains, Cordonier also slashed his Brazilian corn estimates by 3 million metric tons to 79 million metric tons. He notes ongoing heat and dryness in the country is damaging that corn crop. Also, as we talk about what's going on, U.S. retail sales of farm tractors under 40 horsepower were up 33% for March of 2016 and up 26% year-to-date. A report on successful farming at agriculture.com says the two-wheel drive category of tractors between 40 and 100 horsepower saw sales increase 10% in March compared with a year ago. High-horsepower tractors didn't fare as well. Two-wheel drive tractors over 100 horsepower declined 32%. January to March sales dropped 38% compared to a year ago. Well, good news as far as commodity prices, hopefully. We're going to talk about that next. And a pleasant good morning. We would really like to drive things out in all our listening areas, no matter where you're listening to the program. A little bit on the wet side today, but that's okay. It's not raining at the time, so we should be in good shape by next week. Looks like possible temperatures should be getting close to that 70-degree mark. Well, the recent and dramatic swing upwards in the price of corn and soybeans has many caught off guard. Now, most had felt self-assured the looming prospects of another year of record crops would keep prices under pressure. Now, those same folks are wondering if this move is the big one for the year. Todd Gleason has more from the University of Illinois on how one agricultural economist sees the marketplace for corn and soybeans.
There is a simple rule of thumb Daryl Good from the University of Illinois uses when thinking about such things, and it pertains to each and every crop year. Start the marketing plan by plugging in a normal crop, then adjust as facts about the summer weather pattern become available. Factually, most weather forecasters have come a long way as it pertains to one long-range item. There is much agreement that a strong El Niño, which begins to fade in November or December, is a precursor to a warmer summer in the Midwest, and very dry conditions at some point, be those in June or July or August, although that part is not abundantly clear. This is followed by a drought in South America. It's just a forecast, but pretty solidly based on actuals. Solid enough that Daryl Good is willing to take a marketing stance not only for this year, but next.
We have previously made the case for an elevated risk of yields falling below trend value this year as summer weather is influenced by the fading El Niño episode. Even after the recent rally, new crop prices may still understate that risk. It will not be surprising to see periods of volatile prices continue through the summer. Now is the time for producers to establish targets for pricing a portion of both the 2016 and 2017 crops.
Good means corn and soybeans. The price of both crops are experiencing a sharp rally this month. There are a number of contributing factors. Excessive rainfall in parts of Argentina has likely resulted in a measurable but unknown reduction in the size of the soybean crop due to flooding. Heat and dryness in Brazil has threatened the size of the corn crop there in those areas that produced bumper crops the past 2 years. And a weaker U.S. dollar has raised expectations for increased export demand for U.S. corn and soybeans. So where do prices go from here? Well, in the short term, much will depend on how much corn and soybean production potential has been reduced in Brazil and Argentina, says Good.
The magnitude of that reduction will not be known for a while, but some evidence of the market's expectation about crop size will likely be revealed in the pace of U.S. export sales.
Demand, then, for the big crop from last year seems really strong, and when you couple this with production problems in South America and the better-than-average chance of a production problem in the Corn Belt this summer, it points towards marketing opportunities, meaning Daryl Good is of a mind farmers should have price targets in place, not only for this year's corn and soybean crops, but also for next year's crops. If those are reached, he thinks sales would be appropriate. I'm Todd Gleason.
Well, winter wheat fields from Nebraska to Texas recently received moisture that should help the crop get to the finish line. The recent rains were followed by damp, cool weather, and that's a perfect environment to develop stripe and leaf rust. Successful farming at agriculture.com says stripe rust infestations are hit and miss in the high plains. Fields that don't have any infestation yet likely will develop some in the wake of rain, cool temperatures, and dew. Dampness increases the risk that the disease will move into the upper leaves of the plant, which contribute most of the energy used by the plant to make grain. If rust is present on the flag leaves of the lower levels of the plant, most of the green area is intact, a fungicide application can be beneficial. Now, if 25% of the upper leaves are destroyed, there won't be as much benefit to the plant. Most fungicides should be applied before the plant starts flowering. Well, we're going to take a break here. However, when we come back, Farm Bureau is looking for entrepreneurs. And we're going to check that out when we come back, as well as other information as far as your fields are concerned, right after this. Well, as we look at what's going on inside agriculture on this Wednesday morning, the American Farm Bureau's 2016 Rural Entrepreneurship Challenge boosts local business in rural communities with startup funds, professional guidance, and publicity. Now, Farm Bureau Rural Development Director Lisa Benson says the challenge also helps build small towns across the country. The program application period opens on May 1st of this year.
The goal of the challenge is really to highlight innovation in rural communities. We found through research that one of the best ways to jumpstart a rural community, help it get on its feet, is by having good business, good businesses that hire a lot of people and increase that tax base. So when companies are growing, also those communities are growing.
Farm Bureau has structured the application process to enhance and clarify business plans so that all participants benefit whether they win an award or not.
The idea is that hopefully going through the application process, you'll learn more about your idea. You'll be able to flesh out your idea. Our goal is to help you get a stronger business plan.
Benson says the challenge is open to all types of agribusinesses, from production ag to ag tech and brewery.
We're really open to all kinds of businesses across the supply chain, and we're excited to see what this year's crop of innovation comes up with.
And if you want more information of the Rural Entrepreneurship Challenge, you can visit strongruralamerica.com/challenge. Well, a review of large-scale studies published in the Journal of Osteopathic Association calls out meat for a host of mortality causes. The MeatingPlace.com website said the North American Meat Institute said it's based on weak correlation data. The review was conducted by the Mayo Clinic in Arizona and is titled, Is Meat Killing Us? The author analyzed six studies and came up with recommendations that physicians should advise their patients to limit animal products when possible and consume more plants than meat. The North American Meat Institute calls it another example of taking weak correlation data and trying to make a broader conclusion from it. NAMI said the study authors left out one recent large-scale study that contradicted their findings entirely. They say physicians are best suited to follow the U.S. dietary guidelines that affirm red and processed meats can be part of a balanced diet. Okay, we're going to come back. And when we do come back, looks like we're going to fight about cage-free eggs in Massachusetts this election year. We'll talk about that right after this. Well, as we wrap up what's going on inside agriculture on this Wednesday morning, voters in Massachusetts will decide a November ballot question about the state banning the sale of eggs, pork, or veal from animals that can't turn around or stretch their limbs in cages. Now, one of the biggest changes would be that eggs sold in the state would be cage-free when the law goes into effect in 2022. Proponents contend that more living space for animals improves their well-being, which leads to a higher quality product and increased productivity. Food producers say to do so will result in higher prices for consumers. The Atlantic website says the referendum signals a trend. Animal welfare groups are targeting and the purchasing power of liberal coastal states to gain momentum for later pushes in agricultural heavy states. The American Retailers Association of Massachusetts says they're navigating a path of least resistance. Also, bites from the Lone Star tick are causing people to become allergic to beef and pork. A recent report from DTN, the Progressive Farmer, says afflicted people contract an allergy to a carbohydrate commonly known as alpha-gal. All non-primate animals, like pigs and cattle, have the alpha-gal carbohydrate. The alpha-gal allergy is the body's immune system trying to counteract the introduction of the carbohydrate. People with the allergy will show symptoms ranging from mild rashes, itching, or hives, to possibly severe to life-threatening anaphylactic shock. The Centers for Disease Control reports that the Lone Star tick is found as far north as Nebraska. It's also prevalent from central Texas to Florida and is found in every state on the East Coast. The range of the tick is expanding farther north and west almost every year. Well, one thing I want to remind you of, if you're looking at getting a brand new 2016 Yamaha Viking on your farm, all you have to do is go to agnews890.com or thunder1061.com and register. And if you register, you can actually make a comment on what you are thinking of that we might need to take care of on our radio stations or inside agriculture. Whatever you want to comment on, you can do that comment. And this Friday, we're going to be giving away a pair of tickets from all those registrants that we do have currently to Garth Brooks, May 7th at the Fargo Dome here in Fargo. So we invite you to go online, agnews890.com, thunder1061.com, and register for that 2016 Yamaha Viking. And also, don't forget, if you want to go onto those websites, you can get Inside Agriculture podcasts as well as Farm Talk podcasts. That's Inside Agriculture. I'm Farm Director Terry Loomis.